You're the Peer Podcast with Leo Battari, Season 1, Episode 5. Hi, I'm Randy Cantrell. Welcome to the Year of the Peer Podcast with Leo Battari. This podcast is based on a simple truth. Who you surround yourself with matters. Author and keynote speaker Leo Battari will interview thought leaders from all walks of life who will share how they leverage peer advantage and show you how engaging your peers more purposefully can hold the key to greater success in business and in life. Today's guest is Jim Kouzes. Jim is an experienced executive, best-selling author, respected educator, and award-winning speaker. Jim served as president, CEO, and chairman of the Tom Peters Company for more than a decade, and he served as an academic administrator for 17 years. He is the co-author with Barry Posner of more than 30 publications, including The Leadership Challenge, with more than 2 million copies in print, and their most recent book, Learning Leadership. Jim also serves as Dean's Executive Fellow of Leadership, Levy School of Business at Santa Clara University, and delivers lectures on leadership around the world. Let's get started.
Well, Jim Kouzes, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Leo. It's a pleasure.
Well, it's great. Well, as you might imagine, with you being on the program today, we're going to talk about leadership and how we can, and we'll spend some time on how we can all make each other better leaders. But I would definitely first love to start with, you know, how did you get, you know, really dedicating your life to the topic of leadership and I think inspiring us all to realize that leadership really lies within all of us?
Well, thank you again, Leo, for this opportunity, and thank you for that question. I grew up in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., and my dad, Tom Kouzes, was a civil servant for his entire career, starting after World War II. And so I grew up in an environment which was a hothouse, of course, for leadership and leadership issues. My mom was also very involved, as well as my dad, being a role model for me in leadership because of his starting out at the bottom and raising himself up through education at night on the GI Bill and going to become from file clerk to Deputy Assistant Secretary of Labor. My mom was also involved in United Nations Association. She was involved in the civil rights movement. So I saw role models of leadership in my own household. And as a result of being a Boy Scout and gaining the rank of Eagle Scout, I got selected to be in John F. Kennedy's Honor Guard. And I think that January 20th, 1961 date, which still is vivid in my memory, marked the time when I got more interested than I already was in the theme of leadership, and decided that that's what I wanted to study. I studied political science, and that led me on a path to the Peace Corps and then back to the United States to work in the community action. So my life early on was filled with leadership role models, leadership examples, and examples of service.
Well, that's extraordinary. So let's talk a little bit about the Leadership Challenge. Obviously, that's a book that people are very familiar with, and they've been benefiting from it for decades. And it's in its fifth edition. You've got 2 million copies sold. It's in 22 languages. You know, the Leadership Practices Inventory, the work you've done with young people. Did you ever imagine that the Leadership Challenge would have the impact that it has?
Well, early on in my career, I couldn't have imagined the kind of success that we have had. When, you know, as I described earlier, early on in my life, I've always wanted to be part of something to make a contribution. And I have always wanted to make, as Steve Jobs said, a dent in the universe. And our work on the Leadership Challenge and our other leadership research and books has been our attempt, and I say our because Barry Posner and I have shared this for over 30 years now, our attempt to make that dent and offer a contribution. And, you know, as Don Bennett, who was the first amputee to climb Mount Rainier and one of the first people we interviewed, said to us when I asked him how he made it to the top on one leg and two crutches to the top of that 14,410-foot summit, he said, you can't do it alone. That was the most important lesson he learned. And we've been blessed with lots of great support and colleagues who've helped us. And it's been a wonderful journey and continuing. We're now working on the sixth edition.
Wow. It's external. Well, of course, foundational to each of those editions are the five exemplary practices of leadership. And if you could, you know, for audience today, just kind of tick through those and kind of set that for us.
Well, thank you. Yes. The first of the question we asked, Leo, was when you are at your leadership best, your personal best leadership experience, what are you doing? What are the behaviors? What are the actions that you are taking? What is the context? What's the situation? Who else was involved? And so we asked a number of questions around your personal best leadership experience. And people essentially told us there were five fundamental practices. After analyzing data from thousands of people, we came up with this model. And the first of those five practices is model the way. When you are at your best as a leader, you're setting an example by your own behavior based on a clear set of values. The second practice is inspire a shared vision. You have a clear you envision the future for yourself, but then you understand the aspirations of others to create a shared vision of the future, and then you enlist them in it by communicating in such a way that other people can see themselves in the picture. Mm. The third practice we call challenge the process. We found that every situation involves some kind of challenge. Every personal best was about challenge. You have to challenge the process if you are going to achieve extraordinary things. And you have to search for opportunities, you have to innovate, you have to experiment, take risks, and learn from mistakes. And the fourth practice, which is one I know you love, is enable others to act. You have to foster collaboration through teamwork and trust, and then strengthen individuals so that they can have the competence and the confidence to become leaders themselves. And then the final practice is about encouraging the heart, because it's difficult to make extraordinary things happen. People need to be recognized and rewarded for the efforts that they put in on an individual basis. And also we have to celebrate our successes and the values and the victories that we've achieved with our team, with our group and our organization. So it's model, inspire, challenge, enable, and encourage.
Yeah, the encourage the heart one. I actually remember taking the leadership practices inventory and scoring lower in that category than I might have liked. And what was interesting about it was, I think personally, I always thank people, but I never did it in that public way that I think it can be so valuable and so important for people. So one of the big learnings for me reading that book was to do that much more often. And I just felt it made such an incredible difference when just in terms of adopting that practice made, you know, encouraging the heart that much easier. So it was great stuff.
Yeah, thank you. Well, being public about it is tough, because we're, you know, in executive settings and organizations, we are supposed to be rational human beings and not show as much emotion. And encouraging the heart is one of the practices, like inspire a shared vision, which requires more emotion. So often people who are trained in the more rational sides of business and management don't express themselves as much as they should in order to convey to other people their own enthusiasm, excitement, and their appreciation.
So let's pivot a little bit and talk about what, for now at least, is your latest book, Learning Leadership, and why you felt that was a particularly important book to write.
Well, one of the things we found in our early research, along with another colleague at the University of Saskatchewan, was that the best leaders are the best learners. It doesn't matter what style you use to learn, your learning style. What does matter is how frequently you use whatever style you have. And we found that those leaders who engage more frequently in learning activities scored higher on our leadership practices inventory, our assessment measure of the five practices. And so we'd known that for a long time, but we decided after over 30 years of training executives that we needed to spend a little bit more time, you know, codifying what we had learned about how you learn, not just your learning style, but the environment and the climate you need to set. So we came up with a book that explored what we call the five fundamentals of learning leadership, the five fundamentals of becoming an exemplary leader. And those five fundamentals are first of all, you need to believe you can. If you don't believe that you can do something, you can't, because you're not going to invest the time and energy in it. So you have to believe that you can become a better leader. And that first fundamental responds to really the most important question that we wanted to address. The single most frequently asked question we get when we talk about leadership or we train executives is leadership born or made? Are leaders born or made? And we have a standard answer to that question because we've been asked it so often. And that answer is, we've never met a leader who was not born. All leaders are born. All engineers are born. All architects are born. All artists are born. All musicians are born. You know, all computer scientists are born. If financial analysts are born, we're all born. It's what we do with what we have before we die that's important. So the question really ought to be, how do I become the best leader I can be? And that was the question we wanted to answer. Not the practices of leadership, but how do I learn to become the best? So believe you can. The second was you have to aspire to excel. The third was that you need to challenge yourself. Then you need to engage support. And then finally, you need to practice deliberately. Those were the five fundamentals that make up the basic chapters of learning leadership.
And did you select five fundamentals so they would, in effect, they do align pretty well with the exemplary practices, correct?
They do, but it's completely accidental. I guess Barry and I tend to like the number five.
It's more five for you know,
five so. Fundamentals, but it was not intentional, but they do line up. For example, one of the things we know about leadership, exemplary leadership, is that you have to clarify your values and beliefs and have a vision of the future. Well, the same thing is true for yourself as a learner. If you want to become the best at anything, you have to first see yourself in that picture. You have to imagine that you can become better than you are, both in the short term, but also in the long term. So you have to look out 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, and say, compared to where I am today, I'm going to be better at, and what you'll in the blank. Once you get the feedback you're doing now, you have to imagine that you can be better than you are. And you also have to be clear about what's important to you in order to develop some guidelines for yourself in how you're going to learn. So you have to imagine your ideal self. Challenge yourself is much like challenge the process. You have to stretch yourself beyond your current boundaries. You know, there's been a mythology out there about you should only work from your strengths. But we have never found an executive who lived by that formula. Yes, we need to make the best of the strengths that we have, but we should not limit ourselves. And no one who becomes exemplary limits themselves to what they currently are capable of doing. They always are learning new things. So you have to ask for feedback, and some of it's not always complimentary. Some of it's not always positive, and so you have to work to improve yourself. The fourth practice of engaged support is very much like enable others to act, in that you know, you can't learn alone and you can't lead alone. And so if you can't do it by yourself, it takes a team of people to accomplish something extraordinary. It also takes a team of people to learn to become the best, and practicing deliberately, while not a formal leadership practice, we know that exemplary leaders are constantly learning and growing and developing to become the best they can. And while it's not a leadership practice per se, you're always modeling hard work, diligence, continuous practice if you're going to become the best.
You know, I would like to dive a little bit into this idea of engaging the support of others. You know, I know you're familiar with 2013, Stanford Graduate School of Business had a study that essentially said that nearly two-thirds of CEOs are not receiving outside leadership advice. And so what is it about, and it doesn't matter if you're a CEO or wherever you are in your organization, what do you think keeps us from asking for help and looking for the support of others? And why is that so important to us being a really great leader?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that Stanford study, because the other half of that study said that while I think it was it two-thirds are not receiving?
Yes.
100% say that when they get it, they benefit from it and would like to have it. About 75% or so said they would like to have more of it.
Right.
And so they're not getting it, but they'd like it. And so while we tend not to, in executive roles, get as much of that help as we would like, we benefit from it. So what's important for executives to understand is that it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to take the initiative and say, you know, I don't know everything. I need help. And to create your own personal board of directors. You have a board of directors for your company. Have one for yourself. Have a support team, people who can give you feedback, people who can whose shoulder you can lean on when you are facing a crisis. Someone who you look up to and respect, much like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, that you can turn to, an experienced business person who's been there, done that, that you can turn to for advice and counsel. So I think part of it, and you know this better than I, given the work that you do, executives often feel like, well, I'm now the CEO, I should know everything. And if I turn and ask for help, that's an indication of a weakness, or I don't know everything. And that's going to damage my credibility if I admit I don't know everything, if I admit I've made mistakes and have to turn to others for help. But in fact, our research and the research of others shows that those individuals who ask other people for support, who ask for help and ask for feedback, actually are better leaders than those who don't.
Hmm. Well, you know, what's interesting about that is, you know, in our book, Raphael Pastor actually talks about this notion of accountability, and that for CEOs, why would they want more accountability, right? They get it six ways to Sunday, from their board to their customers or whatever. But there's this notion of kind of an empathetic accountability, I suppose, that oftentimes with leaders who they're not going to admit to their employees that they're uncertain, or maybe they're afraid, or they don't want to maybe even talk to their board about some of these issues. But to have that board of advisors that you talk about seems to be a safe place to have those conversations, that they just don't have a mechanism for doing that elsewhere.
Well, your work on peers too has really illustrated how important that is, to get peer support.
Well, you know, again, I think that one of the things that, you know, I learned from one of the people in writing the book was, it's not just about perspective and insights and all these things, but for that leader, when they go to their personal board of advisors and they come away with the support for a particular decision they want to make, it really gives them that courage to act, you know, and a level of certainty that they wouldn't have if they're just sitting trying to figure it out all by themselves, you know, at their laptop. So yeah. Certainly one of, you know, one of the real benefits from it. You know, I'd like to get a sense too of, is there a particular leader that you feel, who may be familiar to our listeners, who's done a particularly good job of really reaching out and engaging the support of others to their benefit, not only for their organization, but for themselves as a leader?
I think probably the best known leader that I'm aware of who has done this throughout his career is Alan Mulally.
Hmm.
Now, Alan Mulally has publicly admitted that he has used a coach. That coach happens to have been Marshall Goldsmith for a number of years. And he is just one exemplar, having been CEO of Ford Motor Company during that crisis period when there was the Great Recession. Now he retired from that position and serves on boards of directors. But he is one prominent example of someone who has, throughout his career used to coach, because he knows how learning leadership on a continuous basis is. There's a wonderful book by Brian Grazer, who is a Hollywood producer, who's worked on many movies like Apollo 13 and others, who has written a book called A Curious Mind. And in that book, he talks about, the entire book is about the help he got from others by being curious. And he made a habit of around once a week having a curious conversation. And I love that. Mm-hmm. He would go to people who knew more than he did about it, whether it was about movies or about something he was interested in as a business executive. And he would make an appointment to sit down and have a conversation with them. And that habit that he built up actually very early on in his career when he got his first job, it was due to being curious. He decided that he would, throughout his career, set up specific times when he would sit down with people and get curious, ask them questions, and essentially interview them and have a dialogue with them. I just interviewed an individual, Brian Alec, for the sixth edition of the Leadership Challenge. And Brian relates how one of his personal discoveries in becoming a senior executive was how important it was to have conversations with his team when they first got together to work on a project, for every team member to talk about how they got to where they are, their ups and their downs in their career. It both built a team, but it also showed people how everyone is continuously learning and developing and growing. And those are just three examples. We talked about Bill Gates and Warren Buffett as a mentoring pair. So those are some very specific examples. And then, you know, Debbie Coleman is the first. She was director of manufacturing, then vice president of manufacturing for Apple Computer when we first met her. Now she's a venture capitalist. But she said very early on, I think everyone deserves a good leader. The people I lead deserve the best leader that I can be. And I think that's the attitude that those individuals who are exemplary have, that the people they lead deserve the best leader. And so they know that they have to continually invest in their own development.
You know, you mentioned Alan Mulally. He is someone who I got to spend some time with actually very recently. And what's fun is he tells this amazing story about when he first came to Ford, and he gets all his senior leaders around the table, and it was part of a regular meeting where they would report out on their dashboards, and they were either green, yellow, or red. And they were losing $17 billion at the time. And he went around to every person and everybody was green across the board, right? So you can imagine there couldn't be worse news, you know, if that's true, that if everyone's green across the board and you're losing $17 billion, that can't be a very good thing. And what he was able to do over time, because the culture there was never to admit you needed help or there was something wrong or anything like that. And there was one executive who finally kind of raised his hand and said, hey, I've got an issue over here. And then he got everyone to dig in and work around that. And over time, by modeling the way, essentially, right, is able to create this environment of safety where people are really able to work together. And I thought one of the most amazing parts of that story was that very first person who had the courage in that meeting to get up and say what he did, succeeded him as CEO of Ford, which I thought was really remarkable. But I think that ability that he had to create that safe environment and to really build and create a team, I would imagine, is one of the things that was just instrumental in turning around Ford.
Absolutely. And that story illustrates something else very important. It's a wonderful story. It illustrates how important it is for senior executives to model the behavior that they expect from others. In this case, they model behavior of always being curious, always admitting that you don't know everything, being willing to ask for help from other people, and how by doing that will enable you to be more successful than if you don't admit that you've made a mistake, that it's always green, never yellow, never red, always green, and nothing wrong. I can handle it all, whatever it is. I don't need your help.
Right.
You do the opposite of that, you're much more likely to be successful than if you keep it all to yourself.
Well, you mentioned, of course, the sixth edition of the Leadership Challenge coming out. And tell us a little bit more about what's up for you and Barry and your whole practice in 2017.
Well, I think that we're laser focused on finishing up that manuscript in another month. Then we have the copy edits and the page proofs and out in April. So for the next better part of 2017, we'll be focused on finishing up that book and then getting it out there and talking about the new stories, the new research, the connection between leadership and engagement, and how important a role leaders play in the performance of organizations. And so that's going to occupy a good portion of our 2017.
So would you mind even offering just even a vague preview of what we're going to see in the sixth edition?
Well, I think one of the most important things that we do in the sixth edition is we offer more evidence that leadership has an impact. You know, just as one example, we know that globally, regardless of where we do our research, the leader's impact on their direct reports has more influence on engagement than any other single factor, more important than pay, more important than any demographic variable, whether you're male, female, no matter what country you come from, no matter what religion you are, no matter what age you are, leadership has more of an impact on the performance and engagement than any other single factor. Mm-hmm. It's not the only thing, but it's the most important thing. So if we want more engagement in our organizations, we have to focus our attention on improving leadership behavior. Another fun story that I think illustrates how important it is to really learn to become the best leader you can be is a story we share from Don Schalk, who himself has served as CEO of five different companies, CEO, senior executive, in turning around five different companies, mid-sized organizations for the most part. Don was, when he was in college, played baseball, and he wanted to be a pro baseball player. And Don said, you know, he wanted to do that until he learned he couldn't hit a 90 mile an hour fastball. His coach at university, when he was going to university, told him the following thing. He told all the players this. He said, "Practice starts at 3 p.m. and ends at 5 p.m. If that's all you do, we won't win and you won't play." And he tells that story as an illustration of how if you're going to become the best, and if you're going to play at the collegiate level, let alone the pro level, you need to invest more time than just the practice time we've set aside. And again, that is the attitude of leaders who become exemplary. They know they're going to have to put in more effort if they want to be the best.
It seems also a great story because it calls upon team members to be leaders among themselves, right? All the stories about the Michael Jordans and the Larry Birds, they were the first ones to come to practice and the last ones to leave. So if you're everyone else, you should at least be putting as hard a work as they are, into their craft, right?
Absolutely. You know, Don's a wonderful role model because now he is an adjunct professor at Alvernia University in Reading, Pennsylvania, sharing his experience as an executive now with emerging leaders in his community, and really is a wonderful role model for others.
So speaking of learning leaders, if there's one piece of advice you could offer that learning leader in all of us for this coming year, what would that be?
Well, other than what Don said to me about practice begins at 3 and ends at 5, if that's all you right. do, we won't win and you won't play. That's, I think, a very important one for all of us to keep in mind. As I go back to Don Bennett, I think, when we first interviewed Don, he was the first amputee to climb Mount Rainier, 14,410 feet on one leg and two crutches. Mm. And I asked him, how did you do that, Don? And he looked down at his one foot, one good leg, and he said, "Well, I imagine myself being on top of that mountain 1,000 times in my mind every day. So I had a clear vision of the future. But when I started to climb it, I looked at my one good leg and I said, anybody can hop from here to there. And so I did. And so he took it one step at a time. And so again, you know, putting Don Bennett and Don Schalk together, we've got to continuously practice. We've got to continuously improve. But we don't have to think about it as one giant leap ahead. We take it one hop at a time, one small improvement at a time. So as a leader, learning leader, we need to get clear about how we want to see ourselves 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, the kind of leader we want to become, that ideal leader. But then take a look at what in the next hop can I do to improve myself? What can I do by tomorrow so I'm a better leader tomorrow than I am today?
Hey, well, thanks for all the work you do to encourage all of us to just take that next step and to do it one at a time. And there is no doubt, by the way, that if you have set out to make a dent in the universe, you've certainly done that. So we appreciate all the work that you've done over the decades that you've done it. And really, I'm so grateful that you were to join us today on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Leo. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us today. To learn more about Peer Advantage, to submit questions to Leo and our guest, and to subscribe to the Year of the Peer podcast, please visit us at leobottari.com. That's leobottari.com. This podcast is produced by me, Randy Cantrell, hosted, of course, by Leo Bottari. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod, Vibe Ace. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.